It's What Your Boys and John Savage. Okay, enough of the long-winded introductions. That was a joke. Very excited. This is the first podcast I've ever done, of What's Your Poison in situ. I had it all kind of set up for, an online thing. And then I had to fly to Joburg. I was at Amped Studios, the studio that I run up there. And we just decided to shoot it there. So if you're looking at the YouTube version of this, you will see that we're at Amped. And if you're in the audio version, you'll hear that we're actually in the same space for once. Russell Legend, who started Biscope from the incredible band Short Straw, one of the great South African live pop rock bands who kill festivals, who are always fun to party with, who I've known for a very long time, who've done so well and write incredible, catchy, brilliant pop songs. They're on What's Your Poison today. Well, Russ is representing the band. In his words, he does all the talking in the interviews anyway. And we had a really, really great chat. We get super deep as usual. This one is, this one actually is pretty deep. So I think you'll probably get to find a side of Short Straw. And actually, for all the glitz and glamour of being in the music industry, I think this conversation kind of illuminates the reality of it, or what the difficult, what is hard about being in a band, as well as we kind of post-pandemic and the music industry is sort of coming alive again, but people are kind of crawling back into the light with some trepidation. And I think sort of if there's something historic about this interview, other than the fact that Short Straw's new album has just dropped, check it out. Super cool, by the way. But other than that, it's just looking at the temperature of the world right now as artists try to kind of come back from what they've come from or come through. So really excited to be in person with Russell from Short Straw. Enjoy. Okay, well, this is a first for me because it's the first time I've ever done one of my podcasts out in the open in front of real people.
I like a good first.
And I'm glad it's with you, Russ.
Thank you, man.
It's nice to have you. Russ from Short Straw. Everybody give a round of applause, but there's nobody there.
No, it's good to be here, man. And it's good to do more podcasts in how one can promote and talk about themselves as a band, because the radio stuff, as much as we appreciate it, it's just so quick. And there's just not enough time to really get into a bit more depth, which often we need.
Are you a podcast consumer?
I am, and I'm really appreciating them. And after years of consuming them, these people become your friends.
Yeah.
And the moment I heard podcast, I immediately started listening. I went straight for the Matthew Moll episode because I just went. I needed to start with someone that I knew.
Matthew Moll is Matthew Moll through and through. That's all he ever is. That was my interpretation of the Matthew Moll one.
Yeah, no, and it was. I also wanted to hear Matthew talk more.
Yeah,
As much as we've hung out and everything, I wanted to hear his process and broken up and divulged, which he got into to some degree, which was good.
Quite a closed book. I mean, lovely guy, incredibly. I mean, I don't know if you follow his Instagram madness.
Not as much as I.
He's sort of like a Jeremy Loopsy type of thing, but on Insta, where he goes into a park bench, claps his arm, and then makes an amazing song. But it's so well done.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it's just what it really takes. And I think we can get into this at some point in the chat. Is like it really just shows you exactly how much you need to put into it. And those guys like live and breathe it, which, and it counts, and
it makes all the difference.
And it makes all the difference,
Well, before we get into it, I've never even heard of Singleton.
Is it a single malt?
It is a single malt.
Oh, you shouldn't have.
Scotch whiskey. Thanks, from Speyside. Ever been to Speyside?
No, where is that?
I've never even heard of it. It's in a place called Scotland.
In Scotland.
The land of Scots.
I am. My visa, well, my passport is currently at the British Embassy to get a visa so that I'm going to Scotland.
Why are you going to Scotland?
It's a trip with my dad to play golf and drink whiskey.
Is this something you've always wanted to do with it?
It came up. It, it's something we've kind of spoken about, but it came up after. It looks good. It came up after he had this little scary, very mild, but still scary heart attack.
When was this?
I want to say last year. And that's when I just was like, we need to do this trip.
And so is it?
And as we started seeing that, like, the world was coming out of the pandemic, it was like, okay, if I'm going to travel, I want it to be as meaningful as possible. And I was like, we should, because he loves playing golf.
Do you love playing golf?
Not nearly as much.
You love
as
hanging
dad.
With your dad and drinking whiskey.
I do it for my dad, and I enjoy the fact that he's taught me how to play golf.
Mm.
The only golf I ever play is with him. And I was like, let's drink whiskey and play golf.
This is for your dad, then. This is to you and your dad. Oh, shit. It's one of the cork ones, which means it's not going to be easy
to
open.
Oh, you better rip that.
Yeah, yeah. It means it's quality, apparently.
Ring-a-ding-ding.
How old's your dad?
He is almost 70.
And still fighting strong.
Yeah, two new hips.
That's hardcore.
So he can still play golf. No, but he's great. He's fantastic.
All righty, here we go.
Thanks, man.
But before you drink that, I'm supposed to ask you, what is your poison? Are you a whiskey drinker?
It is whiskey. Oh, if I had the choice, I would do whiskey. If it's a single malt, I respect the neatness of it. But if I had to choose, I would take a cheap whiskey and put in a splash of lime.
Well, this is a cheap whiskey. I didn't have any lime, though. Well, cheers. No, nice to have you, Russ.
It's great to be here. This is a fantastic space.
We're at Amped, by the way. It is a fantastic space. Say it again louder, but like as if you mean it.
No, I really do mean it. I think we often have these creative ideas, and we often envision it working in this harmonious, idealistic way, and often the real world comes in and eats away at that. But it really seems like Amped is doing what it's setting out to do.
It's just becoming it that. It's been.
It's got to be slow. It's got to be organic. It's got to be at one with the world around it.
Right on.
It can't be an oasis.
I'm really glad you did this thing with your dad.
Yeah.
Right. I've got to tell you this. I have such this burned in memory because my dad passed away like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, one of my biggest regrets that in my whole life was I spent so long getting my band cassette up and running.
Yeah.
And I was in Joburg, and we were getting ready for our launch event, and we had media coming, and it was so much work went into it. We'd got this, a friend of ours had this house with like a stage, and it was a big, big deal. And the day before, my dad called, or my mom called, and said, look, your dad's just had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him on the phone.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm totally fine.
Yeah.
Don't cancel the launch.
I should.
Just do it. No, so okay. He didn't. That's not when he had a few more heart attacks later. He just still survived a bit longer, another good year or so.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was fine, and then he wasn't. Yeah. But I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. I don't know why I didn't just drop everything and go. I was like such a different frame of mind. Sure. I would never have done that thing.
Part of his love for you is knowing that he wanted you to do that launch. He knew what it meant to you. But it's lovely if you can really spend more time with your family. And it's lovely when you can prioritize that. Because that's another thing.
It was a terrible decision. It was a terrible decision. I really think that.
I think we're, as Short Straw, also in a very interesting place. Where for years and years, we just gave it all. Mm. And we've always had other things that we've loved, and other projects and other businesses that have been really something we care about. So, like, for me, it was the Bioscope. I started that before I joined Short Straw.
We'll talk about.
And everyone's got their own things, but we never wanted to not do the band. Mm. And so we always did it, and we actually were this sort of, we could live these double lives and sort of, and we were amazed at how much we were able to achieve against guys that were doing it full time.
Mm.
But it's just interesting where we are now, and just you talking about spending more time with your wishing you could spend more time with your dad as opposed to being in your band career. And I just think we're in this interesting time now where we're starting to make our way out of the hidey holes we created for the pandemic, which everybody did, as devastating or as crazy or as confusing as that time was. We gave ourselves this blanket, which after a while was quite comfy. And now, as we venture back out into the world, we've realized how much has changed. And we've had to build everything from the ground up again. Ourselves, our businesses, our livelihoods. And you start prioritizing what's important. Mm. And I think we're very much at that point now where we're like, we love our band. We love this new album. We love this. But we also like... we love our mental health and we love our family or our wives or our girlfriends. And that needs to start coming more first now. And so it's been interesting because that was why we had that break in 2018. We sort of called this hiatus where we were like, something's going to explode.
Yeah.
Like something's going to completely screw up. And then we were just getting on track to realize this kind of post-hiatus life, and then everything stopped.
Yeah.
So now we're like actually living this post-hiatus.
So talk about the beginning. So my, I mean, I didn't even know this was happening, right? So Short Straw was power in the Short Straw days. Not saying that it's not the Short Straw days.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I remember we did a mashup together that was quite fun. And on that topic, we should probably just bring up Fabian.
Yep. Good old Fabi.
I mean, that one is very close to home. And
and that also feeds into it. So Fabian was our you know, obviously he'd done a bunch of things. He was a musician and recording studio engineer and everything, and he was a part of that Mash Lab because he was a member of Crash Car Burn at the time.
Right. Yeah,
and
he was
part of that studio.
Yeah.
And then he started working for us, after that Mash Lab, I think. And yeah, he put up his hand to be our engineer, and we traveled the world together. After a while, he kind of became the tour manager at the same time because we realized here was this sixth member who was checking in with us at the same time. Like, he's free to also help organize where we check in. So he became our tour manager and became our friend. And we hadn't seen him for years. Well, we hadn't seen a lot of him for the years after we joined Jeremy Loops and toured the world, but unfortunately he took his life two or three weeks ago, and it's also part of what I'm saying now, which is like, I think I obviously can't speak
podcast,
on behalf.
We're gonna deep dark turn here.
Yeah, I obviously can't speak on behalf of what he was going through, but I know there's a lot of hesitancy and instability as we make our way out of COVID and as we start like having to figure out our lives.
So that's what I was going to say. It was like, tell me about the Short Straw journey from the perspective that you went on hiatus, then the world ended.
Yeah. And so I think that...
how do you find yourself back into the studio?
We just had more music and we had ideas and we just knew that now's the time to do it.
Mm.
A lot of the ideas on this new album are from kind of old voice notes, voice ideas that we recorded and new stuff that we were trying to jam. And we tried to get together whenever we could, but it was always delayed. And then we could get one day and then there was a scare or, a wave was approaching.
A new variant. Yeah, yeah.
And so like it all got, what would have taken perhaps a few months, like took 2 years, 3 years. But we just knew we had to do this. Mm. And we realized how difficult and how much effort and work and time goes into this. And then we now started playing shows, which just is amazing.
So have you played one already?
Yeah, we did this little warm-up at Hell's
Kitchen.
That's so
weird to talk about.
Yeah.
To say that
first gig back. And we were also trying to wonder how... like, what does this world look like? Like, if I can really bear our insecurities here, it was like,
Does anybody care?
Do people still, like, think about, like, do people still want to come and watch the Short Straw show? Do they still, you know? And we were debating all these things when one of us had to be like, we haven't played a show yet. Like, we need to just see, like, what our world looks like. And then when you play the show and everyone sings along and it's as warm fuzzies, you're like, oh my God, this is why we do this.
Where was your show?
We played at Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, cool.
It was just like a cool, sweaty club show, which is what we love. Like, that's us in our element. We played Railways, which was also cool.
So you've done a couple.
We did one or two. Yeah, and then we played Millipop, which was great to be at a festival again.
Yes, I read about that, right.
And then, yeah, when you're surrounded by drunken festival okies in the dark, you're like, oh, okay.
Remember this. Yeah, we can do this again.
Yeah, you're covered in mud, and you're like, all right. And you see the panini couple that always have a panini stand
of course.
At the festivals. Like, I haven't seen you in 2 years, and how's everything? And you, like, reconnect. But yeah, we are relatively unsure as to sort of how much we can do. We obviously want to...
What does that mean?
Well, we want to honor the album, and we want to play shows. We want to play it as many as we can. But we've just... I think we're just trying to balance our lives. Mm. And so, in so many words, we might be saying that this is our last album, kind of for the foreseeable future.
Why though? I mean,
it's because we just know and realize, like, just how much.
What if everything works out well and things are really rocking? You just think, well, it's our last hurrah.
Then we could do more. We don't want to make anything.
I'm checking if it's your insecurity speaking or if it's actually that you feel this is the end of the road.
No, well, we love what we have and we love the band and we love each other and we love the music. It's just I think you know this. Like, it's takes a lot. It takes a lot of you. And as much as we love it all, there's just other focuses now.
And is it not? I'm not putting this into your. I'm just saying, like, one of the trends I've seen everywhere is that, you know, once you locked in your room for 3 years, 2.5 years. Going into the world's a bit of a lust now, you know, and you've got to actually really get motivated to go and do a normal thing like meet someone in person. Mm. But then once you do it, you're like, oh, actually, it's not so bad. Oh, like, maybe I could do more of this stuff. Is it not more like, oh, it's just a lust to get the engine running again?
Well, there's a few things happening. The one is our dear friend Tom, who is very much our sort of Keith Richards, is basing himself overseas. So he's now in London and going between London and LA, and he's this shit hot cinematographer, and we really want him to have the bestest and greatest career. So we've got a good buddy of ours, Zam, who's filling in. What's that?
No, I'm just making a joke.
Oh, okay. I missed it.
My joke was not really, because you'd rather have him in the band.
Yes. Yes. And we've got this guy, Zam, who we really love, and he's playing with us, and thankfully we can play shows. Mm. But, you know, a big part of it is, like,
it's Tom. Yeah.
And also all our own stuff. So I don't want to get too much into it, because I still think there's a lot more shows and stuff that we can do. But I think this might be the last album.
Okay. What's the vibe? I mean, one of the things that was interesting to me was, during lockdown, I had the absolute amazing privilege of working with Kaifa Semenya.
Okay.
And we were trying to reinvent one of his songs from the past. And what he said to me was, hell no.
Yeah.
Like, that song had a place and a time. Like, if I'm going to be making music, I have to be making music of the time. People are feeling these things. You know, COVID is taking to this place. So we can't get into that. I know it's a weird story. What I'm saying it to you is the new Short Straw album, is it happy-go-lucky in the style that Short Straw is? Does it more personal? Has it changed? Has the sound changed? Is it more reflective of where we are? Or is it just like, we are the happy potion in your drink, come and party?
I don't know whether it's too reflective of any kind of time or context. It's it's quite typical in some ways, which I think our albums lacked. I've always appreciated, and I've tried to take as much objectivity as I can, is that I always think that perhaps maybe our charm is that there is the silly, fun, happy song, then there also is the slower, more brooding song, or there is the more thoughtful song, or there is the more... And Elle's lyrics are very deceptively...
Dynamite, yeah. You know, he's a little wizard that nobody knows.
I have long since admired his lyrics, but they still surprise me.
Yeah.
I still... Go, wait, you said what? Like, what are you actually saying in that line? And then he'd like tell me, I'd be like, oh my God, that's genius. And I think that's been the great charm of Short Straw, is that it keeps giving you that. But it also gives you this dynamic, and at least it gives me that dynamic as well, that we're not just like balls to the wall punk or punk rock and I love that. And I think it stays true to that. I think people have been saying it sounds mature, and I'm not quite sure what that means. I don't think it's necessarily mature in nature, because there's still a couple of
silly
songs.
Mature is a good thing to be, as a good compliment,
I think. What I think they're saying is like it's arranged better, and Jacques from High Seas, who's done all our albums with us, kind of also just gets better and better, and just layers and mixes it better and just arranges it better. And I think we're getting better in that regard.
Your favorite, I'm going to ask song next on the album, but I'm going to say your favorite moment of the process.
Of this album?
Yes.
There's a single, the single that we're releasing on Friday, this coming Friday, the 1st of April, which comes out with the album, has got a really funky bass line, which I came up with.
That's your job.
and it kind of led the song in a way, and I was really proud of that.
That's cool. What's the name of that song?
The song's called Too Much, and it's got Shane from Desmond and the Tutus on it.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so that's like the fun. That's the big song of the album. Like, there's other ones that we think are just as cool and perhaps more nuanced or even better, but Too Much is the one that was like, this is the big song.
Cool.
Do you know what I mean? This is the earworm that will hopefully get stuck in people's heads, and it's sort of the cool party night out song, but still very Short Straw at the same time.
Awesome. And do you jam in the rehearsal room and figure it out, or does someone come in with a strong song?
We mostly jam it out. It's mostly just a matter of making a lot of noise for a long time until it's like, okay, cool, build on that. And then Elle usually has like a bunch of lyrics and ideas.
Is he sitting writing while you guys are...
Well, he sort of mumbles things, or he's got some lines that he's kind of really had in the bank that could fit, or he just kind of mumbles it through.
Super rare to be able to just jam songs together as a band. You got to be
very different
chemistry.
In the previous album, there was this great song that Elle sort of showed us this noisy thing. And was like, that's awesome. It's
What's
awesome.
A noisy
it's there.
Thing?
I'm drawing a blank now.
A pedal or a melody, or what do you mean? What's a noisy thing?
No, it was just us chaotic in this band room.
You'd recorded.
Yeah, that he just recorded on his cell phone.
Oh, I see. And then he played it back.
And he played it. And when he played us that noise, I was like, I can't hear a song in there. Like, I can't hear this. But when you hear the song now, you're like, oh my, it's there. I can hear it. You can now go back and hear this recording and be like, he saw the gold in the rock face and was like, I can see it. That's the song.
That's so cool. That's really cool.
And he's an editor, so he's able to sift through a lot of garbage.
What is he, a video editor?
Video editor.
Oh, is that what he does?
He owns a production company.
Which one?
Mustard.
Really?
Yeah, so they do a lot of TV shows and commercials and videos. So he directs a bit, but he edits. So he's edited every Short Straw video. He's directed most of our videos. Tom has shot most of our videos. We're very capable.
That's the best. Well, we were the same.
Yeah, you kind of have to be, and you'd sort of...
We had directors and editors in ours as well. And that really helped all of our...
Your music videos cost like sort of $5,000.
Yeah.
A lot of your time.
Yes.
And what would have been thousands and thousands of rands worth of gear.
We actually still have a lost music video. This one guy told us, it was a friend of a friend who was dream was to make a music video, and we did a massive production. I think we dug up some money for it. He shot it, and we had to get all our fans. Skateboard park. I mean, so we had all these fans on skateboard. I'm trying to remember it. It was chaos. It was a really, really big thing. And then the guy dropped off the face of the planet.
Oh, my God.
And every 2 to 3 years, we all text each other, go, where's that guy? And then someone tries to reach out to him. That video will never pop up. It's just gone forever. Yeah, I always wanted to see it.
Well, you want to honestly say, just give us the raw materials.
We'll
take it from here.
At some point along the last 10 years, I think he was having some problems or he had some issues, and he held it rants. I don't know what happened, but gone now.
And there's a point where you're like, dude, it doesn't matter. It only matters to us.
But every few years, we just go, I just want to see the rushes from that video.
Yeah, I was hoarding and meticulously collecting all our jams and demos
cool.
I was like, you know, this will be a 50-year anniversary reissue. It got swiped. It was like on a hard drive that got stolen when I was in Durban. It's like, I get cold sweats thinking about what
lost
I
footage.
Lost.
Yeah.
But I can hopefully I've managed to get Jacques to find some of the stuff, but I actually need to sort of maybe pay for his time and sit down and be like, okay, let's go into every single hard drive you have
and search one by one.
I'm sure you still have some of the stuff.
Did you record the jam sessions for this one though?
There's a bunch. There's a bunch of stuff.
In the cloud, bro. In the cloud.
Yeah. So I have completely learned my lesson now. I have backups and physical backups and iCloud storage and I'm not making that mistake again. And Google Photos. Oops. Like I had things on Google.
In the clouds.
I had this phone swiped out of my ear on the streets of Joburg. And I wish I could just say to the guy, like, you can have my phone. I just want that one video us in Japan where we're all saying goodbye to each other. Like, fuck.
That is heartbreaking.
Because it's like no one else recorded while we were all saying goodbye on our last tour. And it's like, oh.
I thought you guys. I remember you guys to Japan. I think
we have this incredible relationship with Japan. We this last single we released was called Okinawa, and it was all about like.
Oh yes,
beachy.
I heard that tune. That was a great song. Yeah,
we love that song. It's got this kind of like Beach Boys-y Pacific Island kind of feel, and it's a little ode to our relationship with Japan. We toured 5 times.
Yeah, we toured those. We were toured there early, but we were just for fun. It was madness.
It's like going to the moon.
But my kid is 7, and I've been saying hot one. As soon as he turns 10, Tokyo. That's where we're going.
Go to the robot restaurant.
Yeah. I mean, it's a place. It's just a place for fun. Japan is just for fun.
No, and it's just so much love and care, and the guys around us just would go that extra mile.
I have this really weird memory, and it might not be true. For some reason, at some point in the 2000s, Japan had a CD revival, and you guys were part of that CD revival, no? You sold thousands of CDs in Japan. Like after the CDs were dead,
they made
a comeback
listen,
in Japan.
I don't know how part
you
of
and
any
another
kind
band.
Of revival. But so it's us and Desmond and the Tutus. Yeah, so what happened is... Shane, it all started with the remix of Kiss You on the Cheek, which some, I think it was King of Town. Do you remember King of Town?
Yes.
He did a great dance remix. This thing made its way into the internet. And this guy, Dawa, who owns a record label in Osaka called Flake Records, he picked it up, was like, cool. All of a sudden, he's now asking the Tutus, do you want to come to Japan? Because he tours bands around the world.
Mm.
And so we just watched Shane and them go to Japan and have a good time. Shane then was trying his hand at a little physical distribution company called Howl. Under the whole Howl
group.
And,
did you
and
all
Wolves
the events? Oh,
and, that, and all
is
of
that,
that
the Shane? Is yeah. Howl the Shane?
Shane from Desmond and the Tutus.
Is the same Howl? Is the same Shane from Howl?
Yeah, well, so Wolves was the cafe in Ilovo, which was that sort of one of the first kind of super cool hip cafes
right.
where you could have a craft beer and watch live music and
right.
you know. And so he thought this is kind of interesting that we could do this little distribution. And then he went to his buddies like Eve with the Frown. Remember that?
Blowing my mind. All these names I haven't heard in ages.
I used to be in an indie dance band with Eve called Love on Roller Skates.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We dressed in neon and played
Frown.
Dance music.
That was really, I loved Frown.
Yeah, and so he picked our first album to just make CDs to sell. And then he's like, oh, my friend in Japan likes your music and also wants to
distribute
it. So we thought, fuck, we've made it. Like, this is it. This is the extent of it. We'll just have our CDs being sold by this guy in Japan. And then we saw that they were touring, jealous, but none the wiser as to how that happens. And then we set our sights on Australia because we thought that's a spot where an indie rock band could go into, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta have some whiskey. And we managed to set that up because we played a show with Last Dinosaurs. And this guy got us on a tour with Jungle Giants.
Who are Jungle Giants? Should I know them?
Maybe at a time they were a cool indie rock band from Australia. So anyways, we now got this tour where we can support the Jungle Giants around Australia. And it's all set up. And then I was like, we're that side of the world. Should we reach out to this dude who tours Desmond and the Tutsis?
Because it's just around the corner.
Like, hey, we're going to be there. Can we do it? And he's like, sets up this tour. So we have this week in Australia, which we kind of liked. Thought it was cool. Struggled a bit with Australia. I don't know what your relationship is with Australia.
Oh, I've never been as a band.
It's cool. We had a good time. But we had no idea what was coming that next week where we went to
that
Japan
place is
and
off
and
the fucking
just,
chart, bro.
Our minds got blown and we just came back and we're like, we're all moving to Japan.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I'm a total convert of that place. It's the best place in the world.
They looked after you and they give you presents and everybody wants to buy CDs and take photos and some of these venues are more merch stand than they are shop. More than they are.
Also,
venue.
Talking about recordings, every single venue we ever played in Japan, they gave us a recording of the performance afterwards. We have DVDs of all the performances we ever played there.
They can. We never quite got that, but I know that they could.
Yeah.
And did they ever give you a lighting sheet? So they gave us this thing where they said
sheet.
For each song,
tell us what you want.
How do you want your lights? And we were like, we've never done this before. So we just started making up bullshit. And I was like, cherry blossom body. And then there was one where he said, African sun. And then he just wrote it in English. And they obviously like Google translated this. And we didn't think about it until we halfway through the show where I was like, what the fuck is going on with the lights? Like, it is hot as shit.
They were doing African sun.
And it's just this hot yellow bright light on us and I was like, why didn't they change the lights in that song? And then we realized like that was African sun.
That is amazing.
No, and they,
that is incredible, and they take it seriously.
No, very
they
seriously.
They want to make you happy.
No, 100%. And they like the best. One of the best stories as well is we did obviously in these five tours we did them at different times of the year, so we were going into one that was just post sort of monsoon season. It should have been cooler, but I completely underestimated how hot it was still going to be. So I didn't pack any shorts. I just was thinking nighttime venues. And when we got there, I was like, oh shit, I'm going to need some shorts. And we were walking to some temple to see something on days before the show. And I was like, can we just quickly, I don't want to make a big fuss, just pop in somewhere. I'm just going to buy a quick pair of shorts. No fuss. And the one of the friends, this woman, Kiki, goes, oh, I work at Gap. So when we go to the Harajuku station, we can go to Gap. Great. Go in, no fuss, buy a pair of shorts. 2 or 3 days later, at the show, she hands me another pair of shorts. And I'm like, what? She goes, no, I just thought maybe you needed another pair. And I was like, I bought a pair. Like, I don't need another pair. She's like, no, I just thought you needed another one. In my size, she remembered my size. Just because she wanted to help me. Because she knew I only had one pair of shorts on this trip. And I was like, I wouldn't even do that for my best friend. I'd be like, dude, if you need another pair of shorts, go buy another pair of shorts.
Like, we could, I always think you could learn so much.
She wasn't paid to look after us either.
Yeah, yeah,
so it's not like it was this hospitality thing.
She wasn't
your fixer. She was just a friend of a friend
who
came with on this walk, who happened to work at Gap. So maybe she got them kind of cheap, but she still paid for them. And I was like, can I pay you for these, please? Wanted none of it. She just wanted to give
That's
me another pair
so
of shorts.
So amazing. It's so amazing.
Yeah. No, listen. And so we love it. We love
And you know, every this is the thing.
And we know we've...
Everywhere you go in the world, it's kind of all the same. Except for...
No.
Everything's upside down. And I always feel like we could bring all this, the stuff, like the simple stuff, like how the car doors just open. You don't have to touch any car doors. Oh, well, my favorite thing
the
about...
The toilets are incredible.
The toilets are amazing. The people... Like how, from a culture, like just so giving.
I mean, we waste so much time and energy with toilet paper.
When you could just have squirt machines.
But I mean, it's so
brilliant.
Much more hygienic.
It's brilliant.
And all you got to do is take a little bit of toilet paper and just dry it off.
It's true. We would save half the trees in the Amazon forest.
Hygienically, it just makes so much more sense.
The other thing I really like is in the restaurants, right? Like, you have a little buzzer on your table. Mm. So if you need a waiter or a waitress, you just press the thing and a little light goes on like an aeroplane.
Yep.
So you don't have to be like calling anyone or upsetting everyone.
Yep.
And then the other thing, we once, I remember that when we got there, we hung out with the Japanese bands.
Mm.
And they took us into the low, like really the real part of Japan. It's actually
That's
where
the best part.
Alan Shenton lost his cock ring in Japan.
Who's Alan Shenton?
Alan Shenton was the guitarist from Zebra and Giraffe, and he filled in for us because our guitarist
and he lost
was
his
gone
cock ring
in Japan. But the restaurants, the way they're
using it?
I don't know. You see, one of the things Alan did, sorry for me telling the story, Alan, is that when he toured with us, he stole everybody's cameras and took dick pics of himself everywhere we went.
It's a nice move.
But we could see the day he lost his cock ring just by looking at the dick pics to see when he had one.
The fact that he has a cock ring.
Had. It's in Japan.
I mean, that's quite something.
Tell me about Biscope.
Yeah, sure.
How did you start Biscope while Short Straw was still going strong?
Yeah, we started it before. I started it in 2010. And then I got the call to join Short Straw in 2011. So
you started Biscope before Short Straw?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That doesn't compute in my brain.
No, and Short Straw has been going since about 2007. Was always a big fan of them and enjoyed them. And it just started as Alistair and the first drummer, Ollie.
Mm.
And it was just the two of them. And then I liked it. And I actually even said to Ollie once, like, if you're ever expanding, I'd love to play bass. And he was like, we've just signed a dude up. Like, we've just got a guy. And I was like, that's cool. I'll enjoy you as a fan.
I'm running a cinema.
And then when this guy left, he moved overseas. I remember the call from the one guy, Jason.
Mm.
And I was like, fuck, yes. Because I liked the band. I was like, I really think it's cool. L had been this kind of quiet bassist in another band, so he'd never really sung. And then when I heard Short Straw sing, I was like, this guy's got an incredible
special
voice.
Special, man. It doesn't sound like anything.
It doesn't sound like anything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, and the early Short Straw is he uses his voice a lot deeper.
Yeah.
I love the fact that it's evolved a little bit more over the years and he sings a little higher. But the first album, it's like, this is an incredible voice. And I didn't know this guy even had it. And so I loved joining the band and playing all the songs that I knew. And then we had this magic kind of lightning in a bottle when Tom also joined and Gad joined, and that's when the Good Morning Sunshine album happened, and that's when it, like, Short Straw became a new entity. It wasn't sort of acoustic-y folk. It was a bit more sweaty and loud, and there was a moment where I think it was at Arcade Empire, after a month or two after the album had come out, and we played a show to kind of launch the album in Pretoria, and people started singing. And I was like, oh, this is cool.
This is the dream.
This is awesome. I mean, thinking like, this isn't going to happen all the time. And then it just, thankfully, for the next 10 years, it's such a big part of the show. And it's a magical thing, which we don't want to lose. And so just to sort of go slightly back to what I was saying before, is like, we don't want it to be definitively ending.
You just have a feeling.
We just have a feeling. We just sort of know that, like, this is hard. It takes fuck a lot of work, but we love it so much. So we'll see. We'll take it in our stride. But we just thought.
I mean, can't you do a?
Perhaps it's singles.
You know, fuck off on a band, but they still do something every few years. They come back, they do a thing, they do it well, and they go back to their
100%. lives. 100%. And I think if something comes up, or if the opportunity's there, I know we'll always take it. But there was definitely this
feeling.
There was definitely this feeling when we sort of poked our heads out and looked at the world and looked at where we fit. We were like, oh, I don't know. Just because we know how much energy and how much.
Well, don't be fucking selfish. That's what I want to tell you. Because.
Well, it feels like a very selfless thing to be in a band.
A Short Straw, I think, are. I mean, you are a very special band. And actually, doing that mashup with you was really cool to be on the inside for 5 minutes and see how it works.
I really enjoyed that.
It was really fun. And the dynamic in the band is really, really unique. I mean, it's not necessarily unique. I know my band experience was very fucking intense. And I'm not saying that's with you guys. I felt it was very creative. Like, I always loved Al.
Yeah.
But when I did Mashdab and I understood, I saw his writing process. I saw him coming. I was like, this is a different chemical thing going on here. There's like real magic happening in this guy's head, and seeing how the band feed off each other was awesome. I mean, it's one thing looking from the outside, one thing seeing it from the inside.
Well, having this new entity in the guitarist Zam, who's playing with us, it's very interesting to hear like what he thinks of us, coming from his years of playing in bands like Satanic Dacha Orgy and a bunch of other like Cortina Whiplash.
Was he in Cortina Whiplash?
Well, he played with a bunch of bands, and he sort of loved them. He's played with Laurie Levine, I think. He's like a
session guy.
Guitarist for hire in many ways.
Yeah.
And hearing how he sort of what he thinks of us and how
we are
different. No, it's just the one thing he said was like, it's amazing how you guys all are excited to show up for band practice. Because we actually like we all feel like we need it. We all like it's like a gym for us. It's a rehearsal. It's not just we're not just interested in being on stage and getting checks. You know, it's like we want to practice, be tight, be rehearsed, be ready, be warmed up.
But
we're also happy to play all those songs over and over again.
Well, that comes across, though.
Well, that's lovely. That's awesome.
But that's what I'm saying. My point is, the lecture I was about to give you, embark upon, was, I mean, not to take this into a dark place, but I mean this sincerely. I think one of the, you know, I think of Fabian, I think of Ricky Rick, I think of what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that partly we, in South African culture, there are so many people making important work, and there's not enough people really just making people feel happy.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, with Short Straw, there's a range of songs, but going to a Short Straw show,
it's about happiness.
It's a therapeutic, happy experience.
For us too, yeah.
And as the world opens up, I really think that a band like Short Straw is fundamentally needed.
Well, that's
not just and I think that's why I'm saying don't be selfish in a fun way.
Yeah.
But I do think that what you guys have to offer is really important right now. Like, people need something fucking silly, and I'm not saying you're silly.
Yeah, no. Something you don't think,
not too deep. Not too deep.
I don't take that in
maybe
a funny
Short Straw has a role to play.
No, thank you. And I believe so too. But I also just know, some of the anxieties that come with having to show up, having to do the right things, make the right calls, sign the right deals.
You don't have to play six gigs a week.
Exactly. No, exactly. I think that's the that's where we'll be at, where we will still very much be around. We still love what we have. I think the feeling was to perhaps just let people know, like, you're just probably not going to see us at every festival or every show, or you know, or we might not be able to make music on and on and on and on. So there was the feeling that we just needed to kind of say that, manage some expectations.
Have you said that? I mean, who are you saying that to?
It's about to come out. Well, it's about to sort of be said as we release this album, that this might be the last.
Does it need to be said?
It's a good point. It's a good point.
I mean, I know, I mean, not to constantly relate it back to my story. I mean, we have some weird similarities, actually, but... you know, I killed the band by saying it was the end, not by it being the end. I just shouldn't have said it. Because I could have given myself a few years to do some other shit and then come back to it. But I went and said, fuck that, that's done. And it wasn't necessary.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing, is that we never wanted, even with when we pumped the brakes with that hiatus, we never wanted to say, this is it.
I'm struggling to understand why you feel it's important to say it right now. I'm not saying that it isn't, and I'm not trying to pressure you any other way.
Yeah,
I'm just saying I don't quite get. It feels that you guys have some. It feels like an emotional response, and maybe you got to give it a year or think about it. I don't know.
No, that's a very very valid contribution. No, because that is the problem. Is that one tends to. Often sort of just be in your own world and not sort of think too much about it. I think the answer is somewhere in the middle where it's not this definitive thing where perhaps we don't need to say it definitively. But I just, the one thing is, you know, like in...
I'm sensing uncertainty, not closure. If you'd said, you know, we've done our thing. We've done everything we can do. We've got nothing left to offer. We really think this is the end. I'd be like, bro, it makes sense to me. I'm not hearing any of those things. I'm hearing like, we're not really sure who we are at the moment. We're not sure where we are. We really love this album. We're going to go and do some stuff, but this is probably the end. That's what I'm hearing. And I'm trying to psychoanalyze what that actually means.
I mean, the one thing is that it's if it was just me, maybe that can be clearer, but we're having to juggle the professional and emotional lives of five guys who are each in their own place and sort of
hard.
Wanting their
own
thing.
I get that it's hard.
And that kind of on its own is the hardest part. Where what I've wanted to personally say for myself is that I love the Bioscope. I love Limited Edition, which is something new I've started. I'm about to lean into a podcast, which is my own.
Oh, we meant to talk about that. We
idea,
forgot.
Which
we'll
can
do it
talk
now.
About. So just on myself personally, like I love to do all these other things. I love Short Straw. I love the band. I would want to give it as much time as I can, but I'm starting to see just
how little I'm
able to do it, and especially when it often feels like you're kind of being pulled to do certain stuff, and you're expected to show up in a particular way and sell thousands of tickets.
I think the Forkoff thing is a good analogy because...
It's a perfect analogy, and also another good
example.
They
only do what they want when they feel like it's the right time, and then they can come out after 10 years and do an EP of four tracks, sell a kabillion album, start a bar, whatever.
So very much, you know, the example is they're Forkoff, so they can...
Yeah, I know they can,
in
but...
In ways do that, but I mean, also... I believe in us for certain things similar or in our own Short Straw capacity to do something kind of similar. I've got interesting ideas of how we can kind of keep doing stuff and keep making things under certain ways. And if that happens organically, that can be great. The idea is perhaps a more organic, more fluid way of other people coming in or more collaborative stuff with other people where we can release music together under a different name but still be Short Straw but have it be this kind of new future.
No, that's hard. That's hard to do.
That's maybe even harder.
That's harder.
So maybe I shouldn't do that. No, but what we love is a band like Tweak, which is, you know, the old...
Crash Car Burn.
Old Crash Car Burn. And when they have their guys come to visit in town, then they... put together this little tour and do it. And
yeah, I get it. I get the attraction to it.
That's maybe what Short Straw can do when, like, you know, if something great comes up or if Tom's in town, then we can do something. I think what we... Perhaps the best way to put it is, like, yeah, we're just going step by step and just kind of seeing it as we go. And it just we realized on this album, like, just how difficult it is to do an album. So maybe that's also another thing, is that the future, as we probably all know, is more in singles or in EPs, or an album is a big effort.
Yeah.
It's a big, hard, expensive slog. Music videos, like, how you pitch these albums and how you need to get them right for Spotify's, and, you know, it takes a lot of work, which we love and respect and appreciate, but just know how difficult that is.
Fair enough. I'm not going to fight you too much.
No, but I really appreciate the discussion, because I think it's super interesting to hear what other people think, or how I even am kind of building it or phrasing it to myself. But yeah, for me personally, I love all the other things that I'm doing.
Mm.
And I just know that we could so easily open this gate and just fill our schedule, and then you'd miss...
But you don't need to do
you
that.
You miss things. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The
so
way,
I think
the way you used to do it, it's not the way that it needs to be.
Yeah, I think we all in Short Straw also just need to understand exactly how much power we have to create our own kind of future and destiny. And I know the feeling is, like, if we could just play, like, small sweaty club shows every now and again, we'd be happy. And I was like, that's totally possible.
Yeah.
It's like, if the dream was to only play, like, huge stadium shows, like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
If you don't play all the other shows. But if we're just going to play some fun club shows that are going to water the soul and just keep the love of this thing alive, that's very possible.
Let's call it a watch this space.
Let's call it a watch this space. That's the nice thing.
With my remaining minutes, two things. I want to talk about Bioscope. I want to talk about your podcast, and they're related.
Okay, well, they're very much related. So the Bioscope, for the last 10 years, was in Maboneng, and it's an independent cinema for those
We shared Maboneng.
We shared Maboneng. We had
a very dramatic exit.
Well, ours was a sort of a slow death, in the sense that...
Well, Maboneng died when the landlords all went bankrupt and killed...
Well, yeah, so we were a ship heading in a direction, and then when the landlord got liquidated, I felt very much like we were just drifting out into the sea. Maboneng, in many ways, is very much alive, but perhaps alive in ways that you and me don't necessarily want it to be, in that it's loud and it's chaotic and it's lit. Someone used the expression, they came to watch a movie at the Bioscope back in 2019, and they were like, Maboneng's lit. And I'm like, that's such a great word to describe it, which is, like, energetic, exciting, but also kind of on fire.
Literally
on
fire.
And in some cases, in many parts of Jeppy's town, always on fire.
Yeah.
And it's very cool and great, and if that's your vibe, then Maboneng is awesome. I hate to kind of speak badly about it, but as a cinema, and perhaps as a recording studio...
Well, look, we were there. When that thing happened... Place changed overnight. It was
sure. I think you
very
felt it.
Hectic.
And for me, it was like when the highway flyover was closed for 8 months. That
oh,
was
for
like
that construction.
The main
what
artery.
What was that about?
Yeah,
you couldn't even
and
get in
still
or out.
Construction on that thing. So that, and then there was a nice little xenophobic riot, which had everybody, like, say, town is dodgy, and it's like, town's always been dodgy. Mm. Like, that's the charm of it.
Yeah.
But anyways, and a whole bunch of clubs, all with their own sound system, which is great and exciting on a Friday night. But if you're trying to do a patient, beautiful piece of cinema, we were just in the wrong place. So we made the call.
I just want to say, Bioscope, like, it's an impossible dream that you made come true. I think many people have thought they should do, but would never be crazy enough to try. And I think it really is a testament to the type of person you are, that you managed to do the impossible. Like, who has a cinema in this day and age that actually works? It's phenomenal what you've done.
We just found this little space, which is that you know, there's incredible films that are made around the world. There's local films that don't get nearly enough recognition. There's fun stuff. There's old stuff. There's cult films. There's ways to activate cinema where you can drink at this point, do this, and
drinking
sing along.
Drinking in the cinema is a fucking revelation.
And I've tried to explain to people that, like, when we opened in 2010, the fact that you could watch a movie and drink a beer was completely unheard of.
Yeah.
And it was so novel at the time. Now, obviously, the bigger cinemas have tried to do these kinds of purvey things. But
they suck. They really
suck. Maybe not as good, yeah. But we then made the call to move, and we were halfway through a move into 44 Stanley when the pandemic struck, which felt scary, but actually the timing was perfect.
Gave you time to
actually...
Because
we had no landlord. We didn't have to pay... in the old space. We didn't have to pay in the new space because we were not fully ready. 44 Stanley were very good to us, knowing that we weren't ready, so we couldn't pay a rent yet. And then we were ready by the time everyone was ready to leave their house and come and watch something. If you remember, there was all the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd stuff, which was happening while we were closed. There's this fantastic movie called I'm Not Your Negro, which is the writings of James Baldwin in relation to Malcolm X and the Black Lives Matter movement as it started. And I remember thinking while at home in my, you know, in my undies, like cleaning the fucking, you know, the garden, that I would screen this movie again. I would bring it back at the Bioscope because I know the distributor, and this would be an important movie to screen now. You know, and then... months later, the Bioscope could open, and then part of the argument was this isn't a fad with Black Lives Matter. It is a ongoing, never-ending discussion. So, of course, we can bring it back. You know, so we would bring that back, and it would sell out being half the cinema. And I just remember thinking, this is what makes the Bioscope special,
amazing.
That we can kind of come together and have this shared experience and have this kind of topical, very... sort of pertinent discussion. And then we could
Isn't
also...
Isn't there a way we can collaborate with Amped and what you're
I
doing?
I would love to. There's so many different ways.
Yeah, you could do stuff here.
And we're not far away. 44 is close to me.
Yeah.
And just grateful to be on what I think is the right side of evolution, where perhaps the big shopping mall cinemas will downscale. They, you know, Sterkinical was...
This one's still closed.
Yeah, Sterkinical. Well,
there's a Sterkinical right up the escalator that closed in COVID and never opened again.
And they might not because they were in business rescue. They've just been kind of given a lifeline, how that will present itself. I think it will be...
The future of cinema is what you're doing.
Well, it'll be two things. It'll be the big IMAX.
Like Batman fancy, movies just come out. Cinemas, that'll revive them for an inch.
Or the ones that like move the seats and stuff. And then maybe one or two...
stuff.
Yeah, maybe. That's not great.
It's cool, but it's cool. I can't see it. It's not relevant to every movie.
No, totally
it's
not.
It's great for Star Wars.
Yeah, 100%. And then maybe one or two other cinemas, as opposed to like a 10 cinema unit. And
better curation.
And then the Bioscope can exist.
Yes.
And we can be the classic films and the 20... you know, 30 years of Reservoir Dogs and everybody dresses up or, you know, like that's what we do all the time. And we're doing more stand-up comedy, which is lovely.
Oh, wow, that's really
cool. Yeah, yeah. We've
Dude, the Bioscope. We're, that's an institution you have built there.
And so the something I've always wanted to do is a podcast.
Right.
And so it naturally had to kind of come out of the Bioscope. In some ways, because I think
the best podcasts, well, the podcasts I listen to most are all movie related.
Well, there we go. Well, I'd love to get your tips on which ones you enjoy. But for me, I'm going to call this the Video Store. And the basic concept is that it would be us, myself, and perhaps one or two other friends who could be regulars, who are sort of guys who work at a video store, talking about what they're watching.
Bro, these podcasts do really well. These little movie podcasts do really well.
Then,
there's lots of them. And it's
then the guys, if there's an interesting person who can join, like John Savage, you would walk
busy
in.
Busy schedule, bro.
You'd walk in, and I would love to hear what you're watching.
Yes.
And it would be the starting point. But I'd love to hear about you and Amped and what's going on. And, you know, so it's not solely based on...
It's an interview based around a movie.
But it would be as if you walked into the video store, we're catching up. What are you wanting to rent? What are you enjoying?
Oh, so good. This podcast is going to fly.
Thank you, man. I'd love to have you on.
I would be honored to be on. Wow.
When I was a little kid, you know how people wanted to be like a fireman or a policeman or whatever, or an airplane pilot. I wanted to be a radio DJ.
Really?
Yeah. As I ventured in and got to know people like yourself and spent more time on radio, I was like, okay, I don't think I could be a radio DJ because I don't want to necessarily play music and have to deal with
the music's things. Getting in the way.
Yeah. I mean, what happens if it's music I don't like and all that kind of stuff? And then when podcasts started blossoming, I was like, I need to jump in.
Any chance, do you know Morgan Dingle?
I know that guy.
You should consider including him in your podcast. Here's a couple of things about Morgan. He's a director, right?
Yeah.
Feature films is his life. It's his life. Yeah. Me and him, we've been friends a long time. Most of our friendship ending fights have been over a movie. I never forget some of them. We had a discussion about Avatar. We didn't speak for like 3 months, right?
Was it because of the font?
No. I didn't want to get into it. Have you seen that thing
about papyrus?
No.
Google
about
Avatar.
The font papyrus.
Cool Avatar papyrus.
Okay.
And it's like,
It's
the whole guy going like, it was a $250 million film, but the font of the movie is papyrus.
So this, Morgan will have an answer to
Someone
this.
Someone was paid millions of dollars to design the poster, but he just used papyrus.
Second of all about Morgan, he used to be a film projectionist.
Oh.
Right, he's deep. And third of all, he started a film podcast 10 years ago. And it was the best podcast. They only did it for like 3 months.
Yeah.
And it was the best podcast ever. Him and my friend Jono. They did this podcast. Okay. You should really consider
Morgan. I'd love to connect them. And it's one of those things where, good example of how we're sort of prioritizing our lives in this kind of post-COVID world and where everything is and how we're going to balance it all, is that, you know, I'm sure you know this, like I could record a podcast tomorrow.
You
could do it today. But if you want it to be real and proper, it needs years. It needs
it's a snowball.
It needs a lot of time and a lot of effort. And that was the same with Limited Edition when I started the T-shirt company. It was like, if this is going to be real and legitimate, you need to carve out real time in your life, and you got to really
do it.
Give it.
Yeah.
And I want to, and I'm going to, and I've bought
the
things.
Well, that's the only trick to podcasting. Their podcasts fail because 3 to 6 months in, people give up. That's why they fail.
Sure. And it just needs time. And I remember like setting up a little T-shirt stand and like selling a couple of T-shirts and going like, okay, people like these. It'll work. Now it just needs time.
It
just needs momentum and time. And
you've got the secret ingredient right there,
well,
bro.
Exactly. Thank you. So that's also the understanding after being in a band for 11 years. Just to perhaps
I want to
close
put an exclamation
on
mark
that,
on that.
Is that having known exactly how much you've got to do, we now need to carve out that space for Short Straw.
I will tell you this, just to put the final point on that, is that the reason I started this podcast was because it was lockdown and I hadn't seen anyone and I just wanted to start. But I had the thought in the back of my mind. I started a podcast in 2009. Mm. I started a podcast in 2011 and started one in 2013 and 2017. And the podcast I listen to now started in 2009.
Yeah.
And it's still going strong and they are massive. And I realized I preach, but I don't practice what I preach. If I'm going to start another podcast, I've got to sit back and just chill the fuck out. And I put a 10-year plan on for this podcast.
Yeah.
I figured out what I want to do the first year, the second year, the third year. I don't look at the numbers. I look at them and I cry or I laugh or whatever. But it's not about this show. It's not about the next. It's just, if you don't have that headspace, and it's what you're saying, you actually need that headspace. For me, again, it's all about me. Cassette's biggest fuck up was we had a very short tour. We're going to take over the world.
Yeah.
And when it didn't happen on our time frame, we're like, well, everybody else is wrong. And we fucked out.
Yeah.
What I love about what you're saying and even the discussions about the end of Short Straw, which I don't believe it is.
Please, let me understand and just rephrase it. It's not the end of the band. That's what I wanted to say.
I don't mean you're
going to
be dead.
It's just that. I don't know whether we'll be able to put together another album. It just doesn't seem
fair enough.
But we want to keep playing shows. We want to keep being together. We want to keep doing stuff.
All right, let's do this to end off. Top three songs on the new album and why?
It's probably the ones that we've done kind of as singles. Favorite Place was the first song that we released, and for me, it gave me some energy. It gave me some chills. It gave me some goosebumps in that it felt very Short Straw, and it felt quite magical and catchy and cool. So that felt like the first song we had to release, because we had to remind people, we had to warm up the stove, we had to give them something quite familiar. That was the thinking, and that's why I like it, because it feels very familiar. Okinawa was such a lovely,
such a cool song.
New song for us. There's like these kind of Beach Boy harmonies, and it's slower, which is not necessarily our comfort. And then I do like Too Much, which is the new single coming up, but I'd probably love to rather choose the song which is called Red Handed, which is the last track on the album, which was also this thing we jammed and sort of played with, and it was this kind of two-thirds finished idea where we were like, okay, we could take this to the studio and we'll finish it. And
we'll finish it once we're there.
We'll do it there, because we had the plan. The roadmap was quite simple.
Yeah.
We are going to build this song, and it's never going to give up. It's never going to break.
Cool.
And it's just going to be 2, 3, 4, however long it needs
to be.
What's
that song called?
Red-Handed.
Cool, 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 cool.
And without consciously thinking about it, every Short Straw album has kind of ended with this song, this kind of song. So there was a song called Good Winter. There was a song called Eventually. These songs, these kind of big, epic, sort of big songs, tend to be these kind of last songs that we put on the album. Mm. And this is like the biggest, largest song we've ever made. And it just ends in this kind of big, beautiful... You know, when we were recording, I think you'd appreciate this. If we found something cool, like a sort of a synth sound, and we found like, okay, it needed to come in at this point in the song, it stayed.
Forever.
For the rest. You know, it's like, and we're going to add this, and it'll stay for the rest. So it just builds.
Cool.
And I think don't want to be dramatic, because I think there will be more music, but if that is the last song, then it's
perfect.
It's magical. Yeah.
Before I give you a last question, I just want to say cheers, Russ, and
cheers.
I love chatting to you. This is really cool.
I love this. You do loads of interviews and chats, and there was once where these guys sort of had this more extended chat, and I remember us all walking away from it going like, that was great, because we got to talk more. We got to actually, and if, even if it's 5 people or thousands, it's like, if someone can just listen, they could get such a better context from a half an hour or 40-minute chat.
And this is an hour.
And an hour.
You did a good hour. And it was really fun. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Question I have to ask, my finale question. Mm. Recommend somebody else for this particular show.
Huh.
Now, you know, it's got a particular flavor, you know. It's not for everyone. The idea being drinking whiskey, that's an important one. Some storytelling, unpacking some stuff. And like you have been, being really open about, like, I mean, I love you, Matthew Mole, but that was an onion I couldn't peel to try.
Interesting,
And with respect.
No, listen,
I need some onions that will... are waiting to be peeled.
Well, what could be a very tough onion, and we chatted to Shane when we recorded his little cameo part in Too Much, is Shane goes like, I don't like podcasts. Because we're talking about podcasts. But but I think a dude like that would be really interesting to talk more, because he doesn't necessarily speak a lot, Shane Durant. Mm. But he's a fascinating dude.
Interesting.
And he's also like, he's got a lot of things that sort of come out. Like, his design skills are incredible. His humor is off the charts. and you just, you can be like, okay, just freestyle something and we'll try and add it into the song, and it's hilarious.
Okay.
So,
well, I'll take you
out. But he might be a toughie. He might be a toughie because I know that he doesn't necessarily want to chat.
Where that, I, that's a problem. I've got, yeah. The people who don't want to chat, there's just, I just don't stand a chance. I mean, the whiskey helps.
But I know that, like, yeah, Shane would appreciate it.
All right, I'll give Shane a go. I'll bring in the
like,
nutcracker.
I would really want to listen to it.
Okay,
that
makes a difference.
That,
let's do that.
That would be my suggestion. And I'm sorry, Shane.
Shane. You're on. You're up next.
He doesn't want to do it, but that's my recommendation.
Thank you for coming in.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
But this is coming out tomorrow or Friday. I think it's coming on Friday.
Oh, perfect. That's when the album's coming out.
The album's out now. How'd I do?
Lovely.
Cut, motherfuckers! This is What's Your Poison? Russ from Short Straw. John Savage, I just want to give a big shout out to Banani Yomani for filming and all the hard work that's gone into doing this. The first ever What's Your Poison in real life
Institute.
That hasn't been, yeah. So thank you, Banani. And he brought me ice, like fucking Don.